Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 16 of Marketing Elements Podcast. And today I'm joined by Stacey Williams, who is the president of Prominent Placement, which is a search agency here in Atlanta area. Welcome to the podcast, Stacey.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
It's a pleasure. I've known Stacey for about a year now.
I think maybe closer to two.
Oh, could be. Because we met at an AMA lunch here in Atlanta a while back, mm-hmm. and I've enjoyed talking every time I see her at many events we attend. I think we're always on the go.
Yeah, we are.
I see everyone in Atlanta, I think, recently. But we're here today because you own a search agency, and we're going to talk about some of the things, some of the biggest mistakes in search and how you can either avoid them or kind of fix them. So,
right.
I know a lot of people out there, search is kind of like me. I love social. I love a lot of different things. And search is kind of like that area in the corner where I'm like, I don't know much about it. I know the basics of organic search, but other than that, I'm like, mm-hmm. I have no clue.
Well, it's definitely a special field.
Yes.
Excuse me. It's definitely a specialized field. And, you know, as with all things internet marketing, it gets more and more complicated all the time. So, and just to clarify for your listeners, we are talking search engine marketing, not just in case anybody's thinking we're talking, you know, headhunter search.
Yes.
Because I get that a lot, especially with the company name Prominent Placement.
True. So what is, let's go with organic search. What is probably one of the biggest mistakes that you see people making out on the web now?
Okay. And so we're talking search engine optimization. This
yes.
is where we get the website found in the sort of regular organic natural listings in the search engines. I actually jotted down four mistakes that I see people make.
Okay.
So, all right, well, I'll just go through them. The first one is keyword research, which is one of the first steps, one of the most basic, most important, and most often skipped over or done too quickly step, and that is deciding which keywords or search terms that you're going to target. You know, what is your target audience typing into that search box? And I think all too often, marketers and companies will, you know, spend just a few minutes thinking about this. Oh, what do we do? How do we describe it? What do we think our target audience is typing into that search box to find us? But I don't know that they're always doing it sort of methodically. Oftentimes I find that marketers and companies, they have their own terminology, their own jargon that they like to use, but
yes.
it's very different from what their target audience is actually typing in. And, you know, I don't care how many people you get in a room and how long you brainstorm, you know, it's still not quite as good as going out to the field and looking at real data. What are people searching for? So there are a variety of software tools out there. And one of the best is just Google AdWords. You know, the pay-per-click side, they have all these free tools that anybody can use that will tell you, you know, what are people actually searching for. So that's one of the things you want to look at is search volume. You know, are more people searching for keyword A or keyword B? You know, so obviously you want the keywords that a lot of people are using. But another thing you want to look at is competition. And the way we do that is we simply type the keyword into Google or whatever search engine you want. We see how many results are showing up. Is it a very broad keyword? Maybe it's just one word and 20 million sites pull up. Well, it's going to be pretty hard to be ranked on the top page when you're competing against 20 million other sites.
Mm-hmm.
And we also look at who is showing up on that page. You know, do we think we can compete in this arena? Can we fight this battle and win? If not, that's probably too competitive of a keyword, and we're better off picking a battle we can fight and focusing on maybe a more narrow keyword or one that has two or three words in it where we can be successful and show up on that first page of results. So I would say not doing due diligence and being methodical about keyword research is one mistake that we see in search engine optimization very often.
Yeah, and one thing I know I've done in the past is I've gone to my analytics, Google Analytics, and seen what the top searchers are for whatever
mm-hmm.
site I'm on. That's a good way to refine it, I know.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to see what terms people are already using that find your site. So definitely you should look at that. But keep in mind that that's a subset of all the possible terms out there, because there could be others that people are typing in, but if those words are not on your site, they're not going to find you and they won't show up in your Google Analytics.
Very true.
So another mistake that we see a lot is not focusing enough on link building. And I think most people know by now that Google and the other search engines don't just look at your website when deciding how to rank you, but they also look at the number and quality of links on other people's websites pointing to your site and actually pointing to each individual page. And that's becoming more and more important because it's harder to manipulate. And, you know, with lots of people optimizing lots of sites using the same keywords, you know, you really need something to differentiate who are the most authoritative and highest quality sites and who deserves to be ranked high. So we spend a lot of time and effort on building links. It's probably the least fun task that we do, and I think you talk to any search marketer and they would agree with that, because it's tedious, it's hard work, you have to be very creative. There are lots of different ways to do it, but it's something that needs to be done month in, month out. You always need to be focusing on building more links and quality links pointing to your sites. Otherwise, you're just not going to rank high and you're not going to get the results that you want.
Yeah, that's one area I know I don't do so well on.
Well, most people don't, because it's the kind of thing you put it on your to-do list and you've got more pressing and more fun things to do, so it tends to get ignored.
That is true. Yeah, I agree. It is not very fun.
Yeah. The third sort of top mistake that I see in search engine optimization is focusing only on the corporate website, which you definitely want to focus on your corporate website. But these days, every company, you know, every person usually has multiple assets that are online. So in addition to a corporate website, you might have a blog, you might have all kinds of social media profiles, there's probably videos, there's probably images, there's probably press releases, all kinds of other digital assets that also can be optimized, and they can also take up room in the search engine results pages. So I like to be real greedy. I'm not happy with just one or two organic listings. You know, I want to get as many as I can and leave fewer slots for my competitors and really look like I'm the leader in the field. So we like to optimize press releases and social media profiles, and especially with universal search, which means it's kind of the industry term for how Google doesn't just show 10 blue links pointing to websites anymore. They show, you know, maps and local listings. They show news. They show videos. They show images. They show all kinds of things right there in the search engine results. And if you can get your content in there, you know, it just makes it more likely that your target audience will see you and will click on you. And not to mention that maps and videos and images really draw your eye as a searcher more than that boring blue link.
Definitely.
So focusing on optimizing as many online assets as you have and creating more digital assets, I think, is very important these days.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Actually, I Googled myself Monday. Mm-hmm. What is today? I'm trying to think. But it must have been Monday. And I've noticed what's in the top link is, like, I don't even think it was my webpage, which I thought would come up first. It was something else. Then it was LinkedIn. What else? Blogs. A lot of different stuff has come up. And I've noticed it's like, okay, I need to go back. Videos I've done, I need to put my name in it. I need to get it out there because I'm trying to build my personal brand. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed it's like, okay, I've got to start doing this, and I changed my blog. So now when I post, it's my name as the author and not, I think I had it admin, and I was like, that was stupid. And I didn't even think about it at the time. And it's
that's how we learn.
It's like, okay, and now I'm going through and changing everything and adding everything in. So it's like, okay, got it. So
and now, do you have a Google profile?
I do have a Google profile.
Good.
So
good. That's step number one for claiming your own name on Google.
That's in there. Well, I have a very unusual name to begin with. I don't think there's another one. At least
you're
never
lucky.
Found another one.
Says Stacey Williams. Because
yeah.
You know who I share my name with is a model who occasionally poses nude. So
oh, nice.
I always joke that when people Google me and then they want to meet me, they're sorely disappointed.
Nice. Yeah, I luckily have a name that I have yet to find anyone. I found one famous, sort of famous, he's a psychologist, with the same last name, but that's been pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
So that I am very lucky.
You
for.
Are lucky. Mm-hmm.
So, and it's kind of like a double-edged sword. Yeah, I'm lucky I have it, but if there's something bad out there, it'll come up much higher.
That's true. If you want to hide from old high school friends, you're not going to be able to do it.
No. So I'm like, okay. So I'm trying to do, because I've learned about reputation management, was like put out more content, put it out there, and it'll drive the bad stuff down, which I haven't found any, because I looked the other day. I usually do it like every 6 months just to see what's out here. Mm-hmm. So I go through Google, Yahoo, and Bing and just see. So
good for you. And that's exactly what we do for our clients every month, search engine reputation management. We look at those three search engines. We look at the top three pages of results just to see if there's anything negative showing up that we need to push down. We also tend to find a lot of problems on the pay-per-click side, and I'm not quite ready to talk about that yet, but we find our clients' competitors using their brand name, you know, the client's trademark in their pay-per-click ads, which is not allowed. So that's another reason to just, you know, Google the company name, the brand names, your personal name, and just see what's out there.
Definitely. And I've noticed one thing about the search engines, too. I don't know. Now, when I search by my full name, it'll pull up part of my name now in Google.
Oh, because they know that Timothy and Tim are the same?
Yeah, I've noticed that. Because before it didn't do that. And now in the last probably 6 months, year, I'm noticing it's like, okay, it's getting smarter going, oh, okay, we're looking for this too. So it's easier to search now and it's easier to meet a double check. And I tell everyone in marketing or in general, it's like, search yourself often and see what's out there.
Yeah, and that's a good point about the whole semantics, because Google is getting smarter about that. Years ago, we used to be very literal. Like if the search term was big blue widgets, and we optimized a web page for big blue widgets, it would always be big blue widgets, plural. You know, it wouldn't be blue and big. It wouldn't be a big blue widget. You know, we'd be very exact with the language, and we're finding we don't need to do that anymore because, of course, you know, Google knows the difference.
Yes.
You know? But it's all the same, that is.
Yeah, Google's getting, and all of them are getting much smarter. So
that they are. Well, let me jump into the fourth top mistake that I see on the organic side, search engine optimization side, is with analytics. You know, and now with Google Analytics, and there's all kinds of free analytics tools out there that are fabulous and free.
Yes.
One thing we find is that often they're not installed right. It should be fairly simple to install this code and get it working, but 90% of the time when we get a new client, we'll look at it and it's not tracking what it's supposed to be tracking. And one of the big problems we see is the conversion. So the conversion is whatever action you want people to take on your site. If you have an e-commerce site, it's making a purchase. If you have a lead generation site, it's filling out a contact form or downloading a white paper or signing up for a newsletter, whatever that action is. So we often find that the webmaster has not put that code on the thank you page that pops up after that conversion. And that's critical because we want to, you know, analytics are great. We want to look at how much traffic are we getting and are they coming from search engines and which search engines and is it organic or paid and what keywords did they use, all that good stuff. But more important than that is how many conversions did we get, how many sales, how many leads, what's the revenue, the leads that we got, what search engines did they use, organic, paid, what keyword, and all that is capturable if the code is correct on those conversion pages and those thank you pages. So that's kind of step one. Step two is actually looking at the data on a regular basis. Because, you know, you'd be surprised. Again, falls to the bottom of the to-do list, you know, and often companies don't know. They don't know what their website's producing for them. They don't know how many leads or how many sales and where did those come from and should be focused more on organic and less on paid or more on paid and less on organic or maybe more on social media or email or banners or whatever they're doing. So I'd say, you know, making sure that your web analytics is installed properly, working properly, and then looking at the data and taking action based on the data is another key thing that people should do and do more of.
Yeah, I have one client, and they don't like logging into Google Analytics because to them it's confusing. And I'm like, yeah, it can be if you don't know what you're looking for. So I have them set it up so it emails them once a week, the analytics. So it's an easy-to-read PDF.
Great. Yeah.
It's like, tells you all the key things, and if you need more information, you just log in and get it. I'm like, see what your traffic is, see what's going on, and they've enjoyed that much better because they're like, well, there's just too much information. We don't know what we're looking at, and I've sort of given them.
That's very common. I mean, again, everything, like I said, everything internet marketing is getting more and more complicated, and you know, people running a business you know, should they really need to understand what, you know, all these arcane things in Google Analytics? But since you opened the door, I will throw in a shameless plug. My husband, Matt Williams, has a business, No Possum Consulting. It's at www.nopossum.com, and he does exactly what you were talking about. I mean, he will, if people want to be educated as to what the data means and how to read it, he'll do that. If he wants you to a company to set up automatic reports or do monthly reports for them or whatever, he can do that. Because, again, that's something that people do need help with, mm-hmm. so they should go and get the help versus just ignoring it.
Definitely. It's something that I've learned over the last two and a half years about analytics and still learning, but as long as you get that help, friends, as long as you know the basics and know what to look for, you can see what problems are, and then we can either look in it deeper or get someone else to do it. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So definitely.
What, do you want to talk pay-per-click?
Sure. I know more about search engine optimization than I do pay-per-click, because I've looked at pay-per-click, and I've had one of our mutual friends, Benjamin Rudolph, go over the basics of it once, and it was still, what? Huh?
Well, like everything else, it used to be pretty straightforward, much more complicated now, much more effective now, and there's a lot more flexibility and more you can do with it, but, of course, that breeds complexity. So we're talking pay per click. I have to say that very slowly and deliberately because I've been in meetings before where an hour into it, people realize I'm not talking about paper clip to clip the paper together, but I'm talking about paid search, sponsored listings, Google AdWords. And these, of course, are the little ads that show up on the right side of the search engine results page, sometimes across the top, and they are paid ads, and they're, you know, sold on kind of a complicated auction basis. But one of the biggest mistakes that I see with pay-per-click or PPC is that people don't get granular enough with their campaigns because it's very easy. Google, in particular, makes it seem very easy for anybody to just go in and set up an account, plug in their credit card, and bang, you're up and running. Mm-hmm. It's sort of deceptively easy because what a lot of people do is they'll set up one campaign and they'll set up one ad group, and that's just sort of a group of keywords with a group of creative or titles and descriptions that display that are associated with those keywords. And it's really easy to just throw a bunch of keywords in there, everything you can think of, throw in, you know, one ad, maybe more than one ad, and bingo, it's up and running. But that doesn't tend to work very well. Google likes it better and will reward you with higher placement, showing your ad more, lower cost per click, all that good stuff, if you take the time to set up a very deliberate, very granular campaign, meaning possibly multiple campaigns, multiple ad groups, very tightly matching all your keywords together. So, for example, if you're selling sofa beds, you would have one ad group that's all about sofa beds, probably one word. Maybe a separate ad group about sofa beds, two words. Pull out couches. Okay, you and I know those are the exact same thing. Google even knows those are the exact same thing. But far better to have a separate ad group with pull out couches in it. And then your ad copy should use that exact wording. So, you know, sofa beds, one word. Your ad should talk all about sofa beds, one word. Pull out couches, it should talk all about pull out couches. Just because you'll get better results that way. I mean, Google will bold those words in the ad, so it will draw people's eye to it. They'll be more likely to click. And again, Google will reward you by boosting the ranking of that ad and showing it more often and charging you a lower cost per click.
And everyone likes lower cost per click.
Everybody does, yes. And that makes your budget go farther. Another problem that I see a lot has to do with landing pages. So, of course, you dictate when somebody sees your ad and clicks on it, where they go. Do they land on your homepage? Do they land on a page deeper within your site? You know, and there may be different reasons to do that, and they may be good reasons. But often what we do for our clients is we'll set up dedicated custom landing pages, and even one for every ad group sometimes. So going back to the previous example, we'll have a sofa bed landing page, and it will have all this fabulous copy, you know, compelling reasons why somebody should buy a sofa bed from this client. And then there will be a form right on that page, whether it's the lead form or whether they can make a purchase right on that page. So we capture that person before they get distracted. If we sent them to the website and if the website didn't have a form to convert right on that page, you know, that we're relying on the visitor to kind of click around on the site and find the form or find where they want to buy something. And every time you ask somebody to take one more click, you're going to lose some significant percentage of them. So paying attention to landing pages, putting a lot of time and effort into making them, again, granular and very compelling to boost that conversion rate is definitely worth people's time.
Definitely. And one thing I've noticed in a lot of things, I've done some contests for my current client, is the simpler you make it, the easier, more people will enter.
Absolutely. You don't want to give people too many choices because that, you know, paralyzes people sometimes.
And then one person wanted to do a contest where it was a couple of months ago, I was dealing with someone else, where they wanted you to fill out this form and then write something, and they got the results, and they're like, well, I thought we were going to have like 500 people, and they had about maybe 60. And I was like, you're lucky to get to 60 because you wanted people to actually write and do things. And people look at that going, yeah, no. So
Short forms, absolutely short, simple, easy forms. And then there's always the debate with the sales force who wants to put all kinds of qualifying questions in there. And that's legitimate. I mean, it does make sense. It would be helpful to know if people have the authority to make a decision and when they're going to buy and all that. But you're going to get far fewer leads that way. So you've got to kind of balance those needs.
Yeah, I have one friend, their business does, they kind of do it where you'll download like the ebook, you'll just put in your email address. Then as you get more information and more information from them, they want more from you. So it's like, okay, now that you've got this, you want something else. Well, now you give us your phone number, or now you give us your job title, whatever. And then we start going through the leads. So it's like we know who's there, but we kind of narrow it down as they go. So it's like, I told her, that's like the smartest thing I've heard in a long time.
I agree. And it's a real trade-off there. It's a real, you know, you're giving something, but you're getting something. There's value there, and you're building the relationship. So that totally makes sense.
Exactly. And she goes, the people that go farther along, we know they're a good lead. We get more conversion out of them than someone who just downloads an ebook. So I was like, smart. So
then, very smart.
Very smart people out there.
Well, let me talk a minute about quality score. I've kind of been hinting at quality score. This is something that Google has come up with to, I guess, measure the quality of your ads. And again, you know, they like the granular campaigns. They like the landing pages that are tied very closely to each ad group and all that good stuff. So every keyword will be given a quality score. It's a number between 0 and 10. And the higher the number, the better. If you have a higher number, you pay that lower cost per click, your ad gets shown more, your ad is ranked higher, all that good stuff. So people look at their quality scores, but one thing that most people don't know is that if you've got some low quality scores for a particular ad group or a keyword or a creative, it can drag your entire campaign down. It kind of taints it almost. So what we have found to be very effective is to keep a very close eye on our campaigns, and when we see a keyword or an ad group that has a low quality score, we pause it. We just kind of temporarily turn it off, and we have found over and over again that the performance of the rest of the campaign kind of bumps up. So it can be hard to do, especially when you think the keyword or the ad group is very appropriate and that it should be displayed. You know, sometimes we get upset. We're like, well, who's Google to tell us this is a bad quality score? It's very relevant, yada, yada. But, you know, for better or for worse, Google's running the world right now. And when they give you a bad quality score, it can drag everything down. So we just pause that one little guy and everybody else does better. And really, we have to keep reminding ourselves that we don't really care how our target audience finds us, as long as they're finding us, and they're more likely to find us if we've got a really high performing campaign on other search terms.
Definitely.
So hope that makes sense, but definitely keeping an eye on quality score, doing what you can to boost quality score, and then definitely pausing ad groups or campaigns or keywords that are underperforming will help everything else.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a strange world in search, I will say, because I've looked at it and it's like, what? because I've kind of got search engine optimization down, and certain things, when I first did it, I'd do stuff and I'm like, wait a minute, that just made a jump. What did I do? So certain things I'm like, I don't understand this at all. But now I've kind of gotten, okay, I need to do, the title needs to be better. The keywords need to be in it. Links. So I've been getting better and better at that. And search is, paid search is now kind of my, I was like, okay, I need to look into it. But I think it's going to be one of those things where I'll know the basics, but I'll like farm that out to somebody else because I'm just like,
well, that's what most people do because it is hard to keep up with. But luckily, Google does publish all kinds of information on how to use their system, and it's free, and anybody can access it. So it is fairly easy to teach yourself. It's, there's just a lot there.
Definitely. So. And I know they have the Learning Center as well, which I've got to go back to because when I did it before, they kept sending me to the Hebrew site, and I'm going, I don't understand Hebrew.
That's odd.
Every time I would click the link to go to it, it's like Hebrew, and I'm going, no, I don't have Hebrew in my profile. I even double-checked my profile going, no, it's English. It's like, why are you sending me here? I cannot understand this.
That must have been some sort of weird glitch.
So it's like for a week, I just kept trying it. It kept sending me there, so I'm like, okay, now I need to go back and try it and see if it'll send me to the right place. So, but yeah. Search is one of those things you have to do and have to keep on top of because if you get behind, it's pretty much like anything now in online marketing. If you get behind, it's so hard to catch up.
It is. Yep.
Because social's that way now. I'm like, if you're a month behind, you're like, okay, what do we do? And it's like, good luck.
Yeah, you've missed the latest big craze. It's already come and gone.
Yeah, pretty much.
I've got one more little tip about pay-per-click, and that has to do with setting your budget. There's kind of two aspects to this. One is the reality of corporate marketing departments is, you know, they set a budget, and that is the budget for the year, which can be a little frustrating with pay-per-click, especially for clients that have e-commerce sites where we can measure and prove that, for example, every dollar you put in produces $1.25 or $1.50 or maybe $2 in revenue. Where basically the more you spend, the more you make. So we have had some clients where they said, spend as much as you can as long as you reach these certain ROI goals or as long as the return stays the same. So that really makes a lot of sense, although not every company can do that. And the other part of budgets is to, again, keep a really close eye on your analytics, look at what's performing and what's not performing, and don't hesitate to move money around between campaigns, between ad groups, whatever. One example is I was looking at a report for one of our clients earlier this week, and it showed, surprisingly, that Google's content network was producing more leads at a much lower cost per lead than Google's search network. Now, that's unusual. We usually see the opposite. But in this case, I asked the account manager, well, we have a limited budget here. If the content network is performing so much better than the search network, why don't we try moving all the budget over there just to see what happens? If we can produce more leads at a lower cost per lead, that's kind of a no-brainer. So that's kind of a little out of the box, but it's the type of thing that you need to think about and consider, and don't hesitate to put the money where it's performing the best.
Definitely. I think a lot of people these days are going that way and seeing what is performing and what's not and trying to maximize it, and Lord knows everyone needs more for less, I will say.
Absolutely, especially in this day and age.
Definitely, because everyone's trying to save a buck every time you turn around lately, so.
Yep, and that's the good thing about search marketing is it's all very measurable. So.
Yes.
So we love that about it.
Very true. Yeah, search is a necessary thing, and I think when it's tied in right to your overall campaign, it'll work, because I've heard probably a topic of another podcast we'll do soon is how companies will start their new campaigns and not spend search for those words they're doing. Will not optimize their sites, will not do a lot of different things, and sort of leave search out. And I'm like, that's stupid. Because you'll go search for the commercial and nothing's there yet. You don't have anything built. You don't have anything together. And so when people search, they're not coming up with what you want them to see. So.
Yep, you're right. That is a classic mistake, and it surprises me that in this day and age it's still being made, but by fewer and fewer people.
True. So. Very true. Well, we'll wrap it up, and if you can, tell people where they can find you on the internet.
Oh, thank you. We're at Prominent Placement. It's www.prominentplacement.com. www.searchadvisory.com, and my blog is Search Advisory, and it's at www.searchadvisory.net.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm sure we'll have you back sometime soon because, like I said, search is not my area. So I always like to have knowledgeable people on. So
come back anytime. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Elements Podcast. You can reach me at tim@marketingelementsblog.com. You can find us on the web at marketingelementsblog.com. Look for us on Facebook or find us on Ning. It's marketingelements.ning.com. Thanks again, and we'll have another podcast out to you very soon.